The National Rifle League 22 September match, this week on Mail Call Mondays. I'm John McQuay with 8541 Tactical, and this is Mail Call Mondays, the show that answers your questions about precision rifles, optics, and equipment. Welcome to another Mail Call Mondays, and this Monday we are going to talk about the National Rifle League 22 match that we shot this last weekend at Westside Sportsman's Club here in Evansville, Indiana. And you guys have heard me talk about the NRL 22 match before. I did skip last month's match because of some scheduling conflicts, but I was back into it this month and did not do as well as I had hoped to, but we'll get to that. The National Rifle League 22 matches, for those of you that are tuning in for the first time on this, are a great way to get your feet wet in the precision rifle game without having to drive a long distance to larger venues or invest a ton of money in equipment. While the rig that is sitting in front of me, the Voodoo Gunworks V22, is a fairly expensive open class rig, you can get into NRL 22 competition with a base class rig and a less expensive rifle scope and have a ton of fun. And because the NRL 22 matches are set up for 100 yard ranges, as long as your range goes out to 100 yards, you can set up these courses of fire or you can host these matches at your home range. So it's a great way to get the same kind of courses of fire, the same kind of barricades that you would find in a full-size precision rifle match, a centerfire precision rifle match, but do so at a lower entry cost and more accessibility to a wider range of shooters. So this month, we shot the September course of fire, obviously, and the course of fire is the same for all NRL 22 matches across the country. So it's kind of a postal match format. Your scores then, if you are competing nationally, are based upon how you finished at your local club level, and then that equates to the points that you gain for that match, and then that goes into your national points total that helps your national ranking, and it also helps you work towards a qualification for the nationals at the end of the season. Now, we of course shot five stages, and our first stage, and we shot these out of order this time around, and it was because of weather concerns. It was raining pretty well, so we wanted to get the paper stage out of the way first before it really started coming down and worrying about melting the paper targets. There was only one paper stage. Everything else is steel, so steel doesn't care if it gets rained on. Paper obviously does. So this was actually stage two as far as the course of fire, but we shot it first, and it's called Shooting Leaves is Much More Fun Than Raking Them, which I definitely will not argue with that. The time limit on this was 60 seconds, so they're breaking that time limit down quite a bit. Normally, we've got about 120 seconds for stages. I believe all the rest were 120 seconds, but this one was only 60 seconds and 10 rounds fired. The ranges are 35 yards on 1.5 inch leaf targets, and the target was this guy right here. So 1.5 for the outer circle, but the inner circle, I haven't measured that. It looks to be about a half inch inner circle. So you've got a pretty small inner circle, and again, for a pretty short time limit. The course of fire, or the description says, the start position is behind the rifle, magazine in or loaded, and action open. On the start signal, the shooter will engage the top target with two shots from support side. This means support side, shoulder, eye, and hand. So you can't just cheat the rifle over to the support side. You have to switch everything to your support side. Shoot the second target from strong side. So you switch back to strong side. Alternate positions until all five targets have been shot. So you have to you start support side, shoot two shots, then switch to strong side, shoot two shots on the next target down, which would be here, then switch back to support side, two shots, back to strong side, two shots, and back to support side, two shots. So you will shoot the most number of targets, three separate targets from your support side, two separate targets from your strong side. And 35 yards on a half inch target with precision 22s doesn't sound that big of a deal from prone, especially when you're already starting on the gun. And I started bagged in, crosshairs on target, cheek weld with just my hand on the bolt, ready to go. 60 seconds is not a lot of time. You really, really need to gas on. Now, because we were trying to get ahead of this and not have the rain wash our targets away, we were shooting with multiple shooters on the line. I believe we had five shooters on the line at a time for two separate groups, and the one group had an odd number of shooters on it. The issue you have there is you have to make sure that every shooter knows which target they're shooting on and can clearly identify which target they were shooting on. I rarely ever protest a stage or ask for a reshoot, but this is one stage where I did actually ask for a reshoot because I was going through getting my hits, and then all of a sudden I'm getting ready to squeeze off a shot, and I watch a shot hole appear on my target, and it broke my concentration, came out of my bubble. I yelled, "Hey, who's shooting my target?" Another shooter yelled up, you know, that he thought he was the same shooter number I was. It went back and forth. I tried to get back into the bubble and continue on, and I timed out because of our little exchange. Again, 60 seconds is not a lot of time. So we got done. The other shooter was in error. He was shooting on my target. I should have just, when I saw the shot hole, I should have just ignored it and continued shooting. And then when the stage was over, give my protest so that we can make sure that those shot holes that were out were marked as out. But I allowed it to climb into my bubble, and I asked the match director for a reshoot. He granted me a reshoot because it wasn't my fault that another shooter shot on my target. So I went back through, reshot, and I cleaned the stage. That was one of the reasons I asked for a reshoot, is because I knew I was capable of cleaning the stage, and so having anything throw me off was really not a good time. If you have a problem like this, though, again, always remember to be polite, be respectful. I asked him, if he would have said no, I wouldn't have thrown a tantrum. I would have just gone on and accepted my points the way they were, because really, you know, I'm trying to do well in this series, but it's not that big a deal in the grand scheme of things for my life. So that was stage one, very straightforward. What a lot of guys get wrapped up in is the changeover. That is where guys will lose a ton of time. When you're shooting these kind of stages where you have to switch sides, as soon as you break that second shot, you need to be changing. You want just that microsecond of follow through, but as soon as the shot is out of the barrel, there's nothing you can do with it. There's no reason to stay in position and look to see where it was at. Get the switch over, get into position, and start your firing cycle for the next shot. Don't spend a lot of time looking through the scope, grading your target. 60 seconds, you just really don't have that time. You've got to rebuild your position. You've got to go. Now, I've shot support side quite a bit, so it doesn't feel as strange to me. But if you're not used to support side, it will feel very, very odd, and you won't be able to drop into that position naturally. So you'll have to fight to overcome that odd feeling, and that will eat up a little bit of time. So it's really important in your dry fire routine to make sure you put in that support side and even practice the switchover from strong side to support side. This has become a pretty standard type of setup in the NRL 22 matches, where you have to switch back and forth between support side and strong side. So it is really important to actually practice that and do it fairly often. After that, the next stage that we shot was actually stage one, and this is the barricade stage. This was at 75 yards with a 2.5 and 4-inch hanging target, and 100 yards with a 3-inch and a 5-inch target on a double hanger. Points totals were 2.5-inch target was 10 points, the 4-inch target was 5 points, 3-inch target was 10 points, the 5-inch target was 5 points, for a total possible of 100 points. And it sounds confusing, but I'll explain it to you here for a minute. Total possible of 100 points, because the harder targets were 10 points each, 10 shots total, so total for 100 points. Equipment allowed is one bag that is approximately the size of a volleyball or smaller. The starting position, and we had five different barricades for this. The starting position is resting on the center of the tank trap with the magazine in or loaded and action open. And a tank trap, again, for those of you guys that have never seen one before, it looks like a big wooden jack. So it is two boards that cross and then another one going through the center. So you basically have a three-legged tripod going down and three legs going up. It's pretty standard. Again, this was introduced this year for NRL competition, and I think you will see it very often going forward because there's a lot of things you can do with tank traps. On the start signal, the shooter will engage one of the 75-yard targets with one round, then one of the 100-yard targets with one round. Shooter will then move to the cinder blocks and repeat this process. And there were three cinder blocks stacked up on their side. Shooter will then move to the top of the back of the folding chair and repeat this process. So over to the chair, and you had to shoot off the top. Shooter will then move to the 2-gallon bucket and repeat this process. And the bucket was set with the opening down, so you had the flat bottom to shoot off of. Shooter will then move to the tire laying on its side and repeat this process. Now, you got to choose if you shot the smaller, more challenging, higher points target or the larger, easier, lower point target at 75 yards and at 100 yards. So that was up to you. Now, the one thing that I will take a little bit of exception to, and we had a discussion before we started on this, is nothing in the rules say you have to call out which target you're shooting, the small or the large, on this stage. I don't like this because if you intend to shoot the small target, and because we're shooting off barricades, you can be really unstable. If you intend to shoot the small target and you gank that shot really bad and you hit the target below it, with the rules on this stage, that would count as a hit and you would get the 5 points. In my opinion, if you don't engage the target that you intend to engage, it is a miss by definition. If you shoot at that target and you hit a different target, that's a miss, and you should not be awarded any points whatsoever. So I really wish they would have put in here that we had to call out for each target that you wanted to engage. But since this is a postal match, since everyone has to run by the same rules, you have to go by the letter of the law, the rules that are on the sheet, and you can't really take a wide interpretation of them. So we rolled with the shooter did not have to call out if he shot the small or the large target, and whichever target he hit, that was the points that he was awarded. So if you did miss the smaller target and hit the larger target, then you would be awarded the points for the larger target. If you shot for the larger target and missed and hit the smaller target, you would be awarded the points for the smaller target. So I wish they would have changed the rules a little bit on this, but you know, so be it. It worked, and we gassed on. Now, the strategy on this, since you had a 75-yard target and you had a 100-yard target, you could dial for the 75-yard target. So in my case, my dope would have been 1 mil for the 75-yard target and then held over for the 100-yard target. The opposite is also true. You could dial for the 100-yard target and hold under for the 75, but most reticles aren't really set up to make that a great option. And then finally, you could just not dial at all and hold over for both of them. For some reason, because I had not been training on the 22, I've been working with the Ultimatum Deadline. I've shot 2 matches with the Ultimatum Deadline and then just picked this guy up and rolled to this match. I totally short-circuited my dope in my head. I didn't look at my cheat card before I started. And for some reason, I had in my brain that my 100-yard dope was 1.2. It's actually 1.9. So I went in, got on the first barricade, ding the small 75-yard target, went out. I just held a little high for the 100-yard target. Well, it wasn't high enough. I dipped right underneath the 100-yard target and zeroed out that one. Moved to the cinder blocks, shot off the cinder blocks, and the same deal. It really wasn't until the end when I realized that I had really, really screwed the pooch on that and started getting my head out of my rear end and fixed it. Now, There aren't a lot of tricks on the different barricades. These are all barricades, just varying different heights, and it's pretty straightforward to go through it. Now, for pretty much the entire match, the only thing I used was a Reezer Precision pint-sized game changer, and we will be doing the full review of this bag. Should be coming up later this week. This has got the heavy fill in it, so it is sand type material. And this is the wax canvas bag with a leather handle. And it's nice and small, nice and compact. It's easy to throw around, but you have a lot of options for this. So for the tank trap, I just shot it with the points down on the apex of the tank trap. And with the rifle here, the Voodoo, it balances very well, very close to the middle. Now, obviously, I've just got my hand here. If I held the game changer underneath it, then it will balance flat out on that. And I can put a little bit of pressure right over the front scope ring, and the rifle balances, and I can almost free recoil. It's not really free recoil because the rifle isn't moving. I'm still holding it in place, but I don't need to put any input on the butt pad here. I can just get my cheek lightly on the cheek piece and get a very, very stable firing position. So that was for the tank trap. When I moved over to the cinder blocks, I just flipped it back upside down, dropped the rifle across the center of the game changer, and then shot it this way. And again, same thing, the rifle balanced very well. When we went over to the folding chair, again, flipped the game changer back this way with the points down across the top of the folding chair. Now, the folding chair was a little bit rickety there. You had to give it a little bit of a forward load to it to make sure that it wasn't wobbling forward and back. But again, it was fairly easy to get it pinned down and get my shots off with that. Bucket, I flipped it back up this way, and then the tire, again, I was this direction. Now, the bucket is a slick plastic bucket. It's just a regular 5-gallon bucket that you can get at any hardware store. Actually, I'm sorry, this was a 2-gallon bucket, so the smaller bucket. 2-gallon bucket you can get at any hardware store, and the plastic on it is pretty slick. And what I saw a lot of guys doing was just folding the bipod and putting the bipod on the front of the bucket and then trying to support the rear. And in that low position, it's really not the most stable way to run the gun. Putting the game changer or any other kind of shooting bag underneath your forend, just in front of the magazine well, and then supporting the gun there is generally the more stable way to do it. And then you don't even really have to worry about supporting the back of the gun. You still can if you want to. 2-gallon bucket is fairly short, so you can usually get your support side elbow underneath there and support the rear of the butt pad in your shoulder if you wish to shoot that way. But it's all up to you and what your personal preference is. The tire is pretty much a no-brainer. Again, some guys chose to just put the bipod folded on the back of the tire and then cheat it back. I still tried to center it up, and then I still use my elbows at the rear of the buttstock to support the rear. So that was stage one, but we shot it as stage two, and it actually is titled September 11th, 2001, We Will Never Forget. So, pretty straightforward. Now, the nice thing about not having to call out if you need to shoot the small or the large target is when you drop behind the rifle, you can see what your wobble area is on the crosshair. So if you're on the small target and your crosshair is wobbling off the target pretty badly, you can just drop down and ping that big target and get your points. You don't have to think about it. You don't have to communicate. You can just do it on the fly. Again, the drawback is there may be some guys out there that get some points that maybe they didn't deserve because they ganked the shot into the larger target. But I think those guys would probably be shooting for the larger target to begin with. So just something to keep in mind when they do these stages the next time. I really prefer, if you have the option of a small or a large, to call which one. Now, obviously, I'm not the final ruling on it. I really want to hear what you guys have to say on that. So do you think when you're in a stage like this where you can decide between a small or a larger target that you should be required to call out which one you're going to engage? Or do you think the spotter, it should just be on them to call a hit no matter which one you hit? I'd really love to hear your input. So go ahead and drop me a comment in the comment section down below. The next stage we shot was actually stage two, and it was called Time to Knock You Down a Rung, and this is a ladder barricade. So we had a folding ladder. It was shot at 50 yards with a 1-inch and 1.5-inch target on a double hanger, and 50 yards with a 2-inch target on a single hanger. The points were 1-inch target was for 10 points, 1.5-inch target was 7 points, 2-inch target was 5 points for a total possible score of 100. The equipment is one bag that is approximately the size of a volleyball or smaller. Your start position is rifle resting on the third ladder step from the bottom, magazine in or loaded and action open. On the start signal, the shooter will announce which target they will engage. The shooter may change which target they're engaging, but must announce the change. Shooter will shoot three rounds from the third step of the ladder. Shooter will then move to the second step of the ladder and repeat the process, shooting three rounds. Shooter will then move to the first step of the ladder and shoot four rounds at the target of their choice. So this one is easy in that there is no dope adjustment, no parallax adjustment, anything. All the targets, no matter what size, was from the same distance. And 50 yards, most of us are running a 50-yard zero, so you just keep your scope zeroed out. The only trick here, again, was getting a stable position and shooting from that stable position at a variety of different levels. On this one, you did have to call which target you wanted to be on, which, again, that is my preference, is for the shooters to have to call which target. It makes it a little bit easier for the spotters, too, because they are looking for a hit on that specific target. And again, you could look at and you could see pretty quickly on how stable you needed to be. It was 120 seconds, so you could take an extra second or two to make sure you're stable before you broke the shot. And the ladder is a pretty stable position. As long as you don't really intentionally get the ladder over a hole or something, then you can put some weight on the ladder and really sink it in and make it a stable platform. Those steps are nice and flat and even, so if you're just running a bare rifle bottom against it, you can get the rifle pretty stable. My choice or my preference is still to run the Game Changer with the points up on each of the stairwell or each of the ladder steps and put the rifle across the center of it. And I find that works really well. And again, I can get right at that balance point on the rifle. I can push down on it and hold it still. On the ladder, because you have two legs forward, I try to stay pretty much in the center. I don't like to really cheat over to one side. A lot of barricades, if you have a hard upright on one side or the other, you can get a little bit more stability by cheating the rifle over against the side of the barricade and pinching it in and down. With the Game Changer, I lose a little bit there because I'm down in the V. I would have to flip it if I wanted to be hard against that side. And then you have the front legs of the ladder to contend with. You really don't want to have the ladder move just off one way or the other and clip that forward leg of the ladder with your bullet. So you have to keep that in mind as you're setting up. Now this one, the small target, one-inch target at 50 yards with that stable of position really is not that big of a deal. Most guys were shooting on that one-inch target. Again, 120-second time limit. You have plenty of time to get a clean shot break. Here, the key thing was when it was time to move, when you broke that third shot on that step, you need to be moving. Don't spend extra time there. We had a little bit of an added issue with it because the targets, and we're using the standard target package, the targets were having a tendency to want to bounce off of the hooks. So a couple of times we had to stop, send guys down range to fix the targets. We ended up taking some tape and taping around the tops of the hooks so that the target couldn't bounce off of the hook. What happened then, and happened a couple of times for me, is you would hit it and the target would stick out to the side. Not a huge deal because you're still shooting a 1-inch circular area, but the thing is with the targets the way they are, a 1-inch circle that is on a stick and then on a bracket, when you have the target hanging straight down, you can cheat the vertical a little bit. So you can come up a little bit higher on it, and you can get a little bit larger than a 1-inch circle. When it kicks out to the side, you don't have that. You have to be perfect on your elevation to be able to hit the guy. So it just takes a little bit longer to break that shot when the target is hanging out to the side than it does when it's hanging straight up and down. So a little bit of an equipment issue overall. Not that big of a deal, but those of you guys that have been having problems with knocking them off, you may just go ahead and tape the hooks closed when you set them up. If you do a good number of wraps of tape around it, then that tape should last through quite a few impacts before the bullet splatter cuts the tape through. So just something to think about on the setup. There really weren't any problems with actually shooting this or executing it. Guys that felt less comfortable on it would go for the larger 2-inch target. Guys that were more comfortable and going for that top points win would go for the 1-inch target. And I think I only had a couple of misses on that. I probably could have slowed down and got a little bit better on it, but I felt pretty comfortable and pretty well at home on that one. Stage 4 was actually stage number 1 in the brief, but we shot it as stage 4. And it's called Wherever the Cards Fall. Now, I really like this stage because it's movement as well as getting back into position. The time was 120 seconds, and you had a 10-round round count. And unfortunately, I actually timed out on this, so I probably could have utilized my time a little bit more effectively. Ranges to the targets were 25 yards, 50 yards, 75 yards, and 100 yards. We had a 0.25 inch target at 25 yards, a 0.75 inch target at 50 yards, 1.5 inch target at 75 yards, and 2.5 inch target at 100 yards. So you're using the entire depth of the range. Points were 10 points per hit with a total possible score of 100 points, and equipment is one bag the size of a volleyball or smaller. And this whole stage was shot prone, but you had to break position every time. Now, where the cards came into it is you had 4 playing cards. You had a 2 of hearts, a 5 of clubs, a 7 of spades, and a 10 of diamonds. And those would be set on a shooting bench that was no further than 10 feet away from the shooting position. Start position was rifle grounded, mag in, and bolt back. Shooter will start standing next to the table or chair approximately 10 feet away from the shooting position. 2 is for 25 yards, 5 is for 50 yards, 7 is for 75 yards, and 10 is for 100 yards. The cards will be shuffled by the RO, stacked face down on a table or chair, and on the start signal, the shooter will draw a card and announce the yardage they drew. Shooter will then get into prone and engage that target with 2 rounds. Shooter will then get up, draw another card, announce the yardage, and engage that target with 2 rounds. Repeat until all targets have been engaged or the shooter times out. The final 2 shots will be at the 25-yard target. So the way you shot it was pretty clear that whichever card you flipped, that card would correspond to the target that you needed to engage with 2 shots, and then you would come back to the table after engaging the target, flip over the next one, get back into position, and shoot the next target. The only question that really came up on this is, after you flipped 3 cards, you shot that last third target, you knew what the last card was going to be if you were paying attention. So you knew which target you hadn't engaged yet. Could you just go ahead and shoot that target? And we looked at the rules, and the rules say that you have to repeat. So you have to flip the card before you can shoot the target. So that was pretty much the ruling on that, is you had to flip the card. No, even though you knew what that card was going to be, you still had to break position, flip the card, and then go back and shoot it. And then the final 2 shots were on the 25-yard target. So there's the possibility that you could luck out, and the last card that you flip will be the 2. And so 2 shots on the 25, and then 2 more shots on the 25, and that would be easy. A lot of shooters, the last card they flipped was the 10, and so they had to put 2 shots on the 100-yard target and then come back and shoot 2 shots on the 25-yard target, which would take you a little bit longer. So the cards helped out some people, the cards hurt other people. The tricky part on this stage was even if you decided to hold your elevation for each shot, you still had to adjust your parallax because you're going from 25 all the way out to 100 and maybe all the way back in. So there's a lot of movement in there. Your target, if you have your parallax adjusted for 100 yards, it is really, really blurry at 25 at any magnification that would actually allow you to see the tip of that little 25-yard spinner. So you had to be pretty quick dialing your parallax. I basically just held my elevation and worried about dialing my parallax. And still, again, I ran out of time and did not get my last hit. I did get a pretty good number of hits on this, but that one kind of hurt me. I believe I had one miss and then one left in the magazine where I timed out. So, again, not technically difficult because you're shooting everything from the prone, just the time second and moving and getting back into prone position smoothly. So really you didn't want to disturb your rifle when you got up. You also wanted to be a low enough magnification that you could quickly switch and find that next target. We aligned all the targets down the right hand side of the range. So you just ran along the cut grass line to find each target. The first two, since they're in the swing sets, were pretty easy to find. Those silver conduit pipes are really quick to see, especially at closer ranges. The hangers, those black steel hangers, become a little bit more difficult to find with the beat up targets as you get further out. And we generally do not paint these. We leave them beat up that way, no matter if you're the first shooter or the last shooter. The difficulty level is the same for everyone. If you go through and you paint these targets to make them more visible, that's fine, but you have to keep track of them and see if that paint is starting to wear off, and then you have to make sure that you repaint them periodically so that the next shooter can see them. If you have a larger group, this can make things drag out a little bit more because you have to go cold, send guys down to paint, and then come back. So my preference is just to shoot the targets all beat up and have the difficulty level the same for everyone. I mean, we're running magnified optics. You should be able to see those targets out there, identify them, and then engage them. So that was wherever the cards fall. And our last was stage five, actually stage one on the brief, but we shot it as stage five. And the title is Fall Into Position, the Anniversary Edition. I don't recall that we've shot this before, but apparently we have shot it before. The range to the target is 100 yards, and we had a 2-inch and a 6-inch target on a double hanger. It was 10 points per hit for a total possible of 100. The equipment is sling only for unsupported shots and bipod and one bag the size of a volleyball or smaller for the supported shots. So you start in a prone position, mag in or loaded, and the action open. On the start signal, the shooter will engage the 2-inch target with two shots from the supported prone position, which means bipod and rear bag if you wish. Our shooter will then engage the 6-inch target with two shots from unsupported prone. No bipod or bag sling allowed. Shooter will then repeat this order until all targets have been shot. So you shoot 1-2 on the top, which was the 2-inch target. Then you pick the rifle up unsupported. 3-4 on the bottom one, back down. 5-6 on the top one, up. 7-8 on the bottom one, back down, 9-10 on the top one. So it's up, down, up, down, up, down. Now, I did not use a sling on this. This is one place where I think the sling actually might have caused you some problems. Slings only work really well when they are tight and compressed and they're really helping to support and stabilize the rifle. Getting into that tight sling position is not really quick. So going between bipod and rear bag and then slinging up and getting tight would have really eaten up a lot of time. You did have a 120-second time limit, but that bouncing back and forth can eat that up quickly. So what I did is I just had my rifle set up, bipod and rear bag, shot my two shots on the small one, and then I just elevated the rifle and got my arm underneath the forend and shot my two shots on the larger target and then dropped back down. With the Voodoo, it has a very short and easy bolt throw. So cycling that guy was no problem with just my support hand, with not really breaking position. So that was pretty easy to get in the cycle of up, down, up, down, up, down. And I actually, I believe on this, I ended up coming back up, getting ready to fire another shot because I just got in the rhythm of bouncing back and forth. I believe I only dropped two shots on this, and I absolutely knew as soon as the shot broke that it was a bad one because I rushed it. So, pretty neat stage. It was interesting to see some guys struggle between the two. I don't know that I saw anybody actually use a sling for this stage. Again, I think it probably would have eaten up too much time. If you guys shot this and used a sling, I'd love to hear how you did down below. I was able to get shots or get hits on that 6-inch plate at 100 yards, no problem, with no sling at all. So I don't think the added stability of a sling would have been worth the time deficit. So that was the last stage for our NRL 22 September match. And as I said, I did not do all that well, messing up my 100-yard dope on the one stage and dumping a lot of points there really hurt me. I made a couple of small mistakes on the other stages, and just there were a couple of shots that I rushed, and that combined together just really hurt me overall. If you make stupid mistakes, it really knocks you down really, really fast, and it's very difficult to recover from that when you only have five stages. You're only shooting 50 shots overall. Little mistakes really hurt you, and they are really cumulative, and overall, you can't recover from them. So that was my own fault. I will come better prepared the next time out. I will say, again, this is one of those matches where the Voodoo performed perfectly. We are ready to do the full review on this rifle. I've shot three different matches with it now. I've got quite a bit of trigger time on it and a really, really good feel for how the system works. And so far, I have very, very few complaints about it at all. It works really well. It is a high dollar item. It is a high price point. But this is one of the most accurate 22s that I have here. And more importantly, it is really, really reliable. I have not had any reliability issues with it. It seems to have a really, really strong firing pin strike. So we haven't had, I don't know that I've had a single failure to fire with this thing so far with Wolf Match Target, which is most of what we have put through it. So the reliability is really an important thing. I have had reliability issues with the 10-22. I've had some shots where they were just failure to fire that I got a light firing pin strike on them. And then, of course, with the semi-automatic rifle, that causes you to have to break position, cycle that bolt. You're not already anticipating cycling the bolt, so when you have a problem, it's a little bit slower to get up there and fix it. And there are other issues that can be caused too with the semi-automatic rifle that really gets you. It can be a huge advantage on tight time crunches. That 60-second stage, the guys that were running semi-autos were just able to just click, click, and then move to the next one, click, click, and just keep on through, where I sacrifice a few seconds to run the bolt. But this bolt is so smooth and so short that it's really not a huge time sacrifice to shoot the bolt action rifle versus a semi-auto. The weight is really great. It shoots like a center fire rifle. Obviously, you don't have the recoil of the center fire rifle, but when you're getting in positions and you're moving it around, it feels like a center fire rifle, and that weight gives you a little bit of extra stability as well. So again, very pleased with it. At the end of this match, I went ahead and laid some ammo out and let a bunch of the other shooters go through and shoot it. We've got quite a few guys, I think, that are going to purchase the Voodoo V22s. So we'll see a whole lot more of them on the line probably for the next season. I think this is really becoming one of the standard rifles for the NRL 22 competition, and with really good reason, especially for guys that shoot PRS and NRL with a center fire rifle, because now you're going to be able to set up one of these exactly like your center fire rifle, have all the same equipment, possibly even the exact same rifle scope, and really have a lot of fun with it and get a lot of good training out of it as well. So that is it for the National Rifle League September match. If you guys have any questions or comments over anything we've covered, please leave your comments in the comments section down below or send them to us on Facebook or Twitter. If you're listening to this on your favorite podcast app, you can send questions to us at 8541tactical@gmail.com. If you like the video, please make sure you like, share, and subscribe. And until next time, get out and shoot!